The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 94 of The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer.
I'm Sari Kamen.
As you can tell, we are giddy with excitement.
I'm so excited.
To be back in studio after like a 3-week hiatus.
Oh man, I missed you.
I don't even know what I did.
I just thought about you.
Oh, okay. No, but I mean, I think that, you know, the holidays are a great time to relax, to not think about work in the restaurant industry. It's madness up until New Year's Eve, and now I've feel like the tenseness in my shoulders going away, yeah. And that eye twitch that I had for like 2 weeks is gone finally. And now that I said it, it's probably to come back. But
well, you actually had to work on New Year's Eve at a restaurant.
So. I did. I threw a great party. I didn't expect it to be as successful as it was because it was kind of a shot in the dark. But the good people who I don't know showed up and spent money, and I dressed up as Andy Warhol.
I heard. In fact, I saw pictures, and you make a really pretty Andy Warhol.
Thank you. Thank you, Sari. I think so. I mean, that's not saying
Andy
too much.
Andy Warhol wishes he looked like you.
That's not saying too much, but no, I got this amazing Fuji, like Instax, basically like a Polaroid, but they don't make Polaroids anymore, camera, and I kind of used that and my costume as like this like creepy freedom to just kind of go and say whatever I wanted to guess.
Yeah, well, you already have the glasses.
Well, they didn't know I was the general manager. I was like, I was just Andy Warhol.
There you go.
One guy asked me for to take off my wig, and I said, no, this is my hair. I'm Andy fucking Warhol.
How dare he?
And he was like, yeah, oh, he totally understood. He's like, oh yeah, you're right.
You're right. I'll never question you again.
What'd you do for New Year's?
I had dinner with some friends, and it was really low key, and it was really kind of lovely. I felt like I'm maybe at a certain age where spending quality time with friends is more than enough.
I mean, yeah, 21 is definitely the time to start.
You know, I'm actually 22. I didn't tell you.
Oh my, I
had a birthday over the holidays.
It's amazing.
I know. So old. Anyway, it was lovely and low key, and I got a couple food items that I felt were sort of traditional for New Year's Eve. I got caviar.
Okay.
And it was actually kind of left untouched by the majority of the group because we were sort of focused like on bigger and better food items like pasta. And I had a lot left over. So last night I had a sweatpants and caviar party.
Amazing. Because caviar is so filling, you better wear those sweatpants.
Well, there was something, and you know, I haven't announced our guests today, and I guess I'll take this opportunity to say that Mike Lee, founder of Studio Feast, is in the house.
Woo!
As well as the lovely Danielle Gould, founder, CEO of Food and Tech Connect.
Hello.
Hi. So Mike Lee had this dinner recently, and it was like a highbrow, lowbrow kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that. We're not going to get into it now.
But
so
you
don't
touched on it with your caviar and sweatpants.
Exactly. And I want to say that I think that that was in my brain, and I was influenced by you, even though I didn't realize it until right now.
Oh my God. He's like subliminal.
He's in my subliminal subconsciousness. And so I was like, oh, I have caviar, but I don't want to change out of my sweatpants. What do? Let's do a mashup together. And, you know, we had some food and we watched like stupid movies, and it was really the best of both worlds. And going forward, I think that's my resolution. Is the best of both worlds.
Is highbrow and lowbrow.
Highbrow, lowbrow. Nice. And enjoy it to the fullest, but you don't have to compromise. You don't have to wear a button always or zippers to enjoy these finer moments in life. Just keep it cool, guys.
I think I get a nickel every time you wear sweatpants.
Oh, I'm glad somebody does. I'm imagining you've been very rich this holiday season.
My resolution is to not work now. That's perfect.
Yep, I would like to work more, but also keep wearing sweatpants.
Awesome. The highbrow, lowbrow thing for me would be like going into, you know, a nice restaurant and just really wanting a Coors Light or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
And I should no longer be ashamed of that.
There's no shame in that. There's pride.
Absolutely.
I think we need to embrace that. And I think that's a good transition, actually, probably. Well, no, we wanted to talk a little bit more, I mean, about resolutions. I was curious if Danielle, Mike, did you make any resolutions? Do you have any resolutions?
That, I mean, the whole caviar and sweatpants thing, that kind of gently touches on my resolution of just embracing being an old man more. Mm. But, like, I still want to do, like, young man things, but just do them earlier. Like, oh, you know. Nice.
Like 6 o'clock instead of, yeah, like 11
o'clock.
Yeah, let's
drink an irresponsible amount of bourbon, but at like 4:30.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have plenty of time to
sleep. You're in bed by 9. Yeah, exactly. Whereas it would start at 9 before.
Yeah, and then, it doesn't have to wreck your day the next day.
Yeah, no. But yeah, no, I mean,
it's
like,
it's more the, being a functional alcoholic.
Exactly. But it's like, it's literally that, like, caviar and sweatpants. Like, caviar is a very kind of old person thing, but like, let's do it comfortably.
That's just, I just think comfort.
You know?
Without having to sacrifice luxury. That's my New Year's.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I think I finally honed in on it. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, so that's mine. Embrace being an old man.
Great. Danielle?
I want to sleep a lot this year.
Wow, you guys are really just on your way to the retirement home. It's like fast track.
I thought it was going to be learn to live with old man.
That sounds like an sleep everyday project.
Yes. Yes.
We're working
on that a lot. And I want to master a really awesome gluten-free bread.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Because you're of the gluten-free variety.
I am of the gluten-free variety. Plus, it's just a really great challenge. I mean, bread is so difficult, and then take the gluten out, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, it's never been done. How are you even going to... I mean, you are food and tech next, so if anyone could invent that, it would be you.
It has been done. It's just, you have to be very, you know...
Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2014, yeah. Gluten-free bread.
That's some science that is beyond me.
That's beyond. Really.
You know what my resolution is?
What?
Is to no longer say things with, like, ZZs on the end of
it. Oh, you broke that, like, 2 minutes ago.
What's an example? Like,
well, one of my dearest friends, Pam Stubbs, I call her Pamsy Poopsy Cakesies, which is just, like, I'm 30
kinda
years old.
Kind of rolls off your tongue.
Just because I say it a lot.
I can't say it. Pamsy Poopsy Cakesies.
Or, like, phonesies, or, like, I say to my staff, I'm like, okay, Z's, like, behind Z's. And they're like, what are you doing?
You said phonesies, like, 3 minutes ago.
Okay, I'm done. I'm done doing that. I'm also done, like, waking up and immediately checking my phone. Oh, I feel like that's the worst.
That's a good one.
That's the worst way to wake up, to, like, immediately, when you get just, it doesn't even matter who your email's from. Like, it's from, like, REI. I'm like, oh, God, why do I have to see REI the first thing I wake up?
You don't.
So, no, you don't. So, you know, I think that's my resolution. Put the phone away, wake up, have coffee, and then get on the train and realize the world is falling apart.
I posted something on my Facebook the other day about I felt like in 2014 I never wanted to hear the word or word hybrid amazeballs anymore, and I got a barrage of responses. I mean, people had feelings of all sorts of
types
of feelings. Which, when I don't use amazeballs, I don't have any vocabulary to fall back on.
Well, I would probably call it amazeballsies.
Yeah. But then some person posted an article about words you're not supposed to use in your 30s. And of those 10, the only one I felt like I didn't want to use was amazeballs. And so then I was like, oh, am I hypocritical? Because I want to say cray all day. And no one can stop me.
I cannot get rid of cray. Because cray has a special place.
Cray feels and it's, so good.
And it's only for, like, certain really super cray people.
And
right?
Honestly, there's just a lot of things to do.
Yes. Yeah.
This is
so,
not time for the whole word.
I resolved to never give up cray.
There's a lot of shit to do in the day.
I mean, who really needs a Z? Let's just take it out.
Well, you borrow the Z for later and phonesies and...
You borrow. It's like rollover points.
Exactly.
No, actually, I'm more European about it. I use an S.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, I did not know.
French Canadian.
I'm just kidding about it. Oh,
okay,
great.
To
well,
our
I hope,
show.
I hope we can truly resolve to do all these things in 2014, and I hope all of our millions of listeners out there do the same.
Good job, guys.
Stick to your resolution. That's a good resolution. Stick to your resolution.
But at the same time, I'm like, that's cray. Like, don't stick to your resolution, because resolutions are stupid.
Well, I certainly do resolve to take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Mike Lee, founder of Studio Feast.
I can get behind that.
Cray.
You're listening to Seriously by Sleepies on the heritageradionetwork.org. Probably another thing you shouldn't say when you're 30.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
We're back. This is The Morning After, and it's 2014, and we're in the studio. We have, on our couch, we have Mike Lee. He's the founder of Studio Feast.
Hello.
Hi. And we also have Danielle Gould, who's Hello. The founder of Food and Tech Connect. We're going to start with Mike. And Mike, how's your 2014 going?
Pretty good. It's like, what, 4 days in?
Yeah, five.
Five.
Yeah.
Cleaned up.
We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. So we met, I want to touch on that. Actually, met Mike and Danielle both at Eat Retreat, mm-hmm. which happened back in October mm-hmm. in the lovely Finger Lakes.
Yep.
Which was kind of like a slumber camp weekend sleepover.
Magical.
It's a magical summer camp weekend for food professionals.
Yes.
And it was an excellent meeting of the minds and a confluence of ideas and recipes and flavors. And we all learned from each other. And I'm just so happy that we were able to connect and that we're all here together now.
Yeah.
And
we deep fried pig's testicles at 2:30
you guys
in the
did.
Morning.
I think I was still on the dance floor at that point.
If you can do it at 2:30 in the morning, you could do it any time of the day.
If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Yes, exactly.
Definitely. In 2014, only deep frying pig testicles at 10 p.m.
Yeah, earlier. Good. So, yeah, Eat Retreat was good.
Yeah, so that was the first time I'd met you, although I had heard of the legend of you.
Oh, geez.
Even before that. you are a founder of a culinary group called Studio Feast.
Yep.
And you are known for creating these very kind of innovative, outside of the box, almost avant-garde, theatrical eating events.
Yep.
Yes?
Yeah. I mean, there's a big range. I mean, we, at the core, just try to do something really different with, a dining experience. I mean, we, aren't a restaurant, and, we aren't just, like, your buddy next door making dinner randomly. You know, we have a membership list, and we kind of throw these events, and each one is sort of, like, its own thing. So, yeah, it's been 7 years now. Actually, 8 years in February.
Congratulations.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Yeah.
So, are you a chef?
No. So, I actually make a kind of a big stink about that. Like, I'm not a chef. I don't claim to be a chef. I'm kind of, like, trying to raise the flag for, like, adventurous home cooks and trying to show, like, part of, like, the subtext of what we do with Studio Feast is say, like, we're regular people just like you, and, there's a way to kind of rethink how you cook and restructure, like, how you approach cooking, that you can do a lot more than you ever thought you could at home. So, because I think, if you see a chef, if you see Thomas Keller do something, and it's amazing, amazeballs, it's almost also just
so
kind
can
of,
I get like a
but if you see like guys like that do stuff like that, it almost seems like it's obvious, right? And there's sort of a wall between like a normal human being and what that is. I mean, people love to go and patronize that and enjoy it, but you don't get a sense that like normal people are going to be like just picking up a knife and just doing that same thing. So we try to like turn it around and say like, well, you can do, it doesn't have to be as elaborate or intricate as something from the French Laundry cookbook, but it's going to be something well thought out. It's going to be something creative. It's going to be something impressive and interesting. But it can also just come from people that don't have culinary backgrounds.
Yeah, and it also just kind of takes it out of context from the normal, conventional dining situation.
Exactly. And, Studio Feast is really like a creative platform, so we don't really have we're not beholden to like make revenue from it right now. All our events break even, and it's really just a creative platform for me. So we don't have like the normal structure that a restaurant has to, have any semblance of regularity in terms of, open every day or like consistent menu items and stuff like that. So it kind of just gives us the advantage to just be free to play. Mm-hmm.
What was your kind of original connection to food that inspired you to begin Studio Feast?
God, I grew up in a restaurant family. my grandfather had a restaurant in the 50s in Detroit. He had one of the biggest Chinese restaurants in downtown Detroit, and one of the first ones. And then from there, like, my parents and uncles and aunts and everyone had restaurants. So, but the funny thing is I've never actually worked a day in a restaurant before. The closest I ever came is I worked, even though my parents owned a Chinese restaurant, and my uncle did too, and my grandparents did too, I worked in an Italian banquet hall when I was 13 years old setting up tables. That was the closest I ever came to working in, like, a restaurant environment. So largely what I learned was, like, from just home. You know, I have a really big family, and my mom has food ADD, so she always is cooking 16 to 18 different dishes for 32 people. And, you know, that was kind of, like, where I got it, just learning through osmosis. And then coming out here, you know, missing family, you know, I've lived here 11 years now. I just wanted to recreate that and go a little step further and say, like, well, okay, let's not just make dinner for friends, let's do it for strangers. And then let's, you know, go deeper in how creative we do it and how ambitious we do it. So that's kind of where it started.
Your staff or your co-creators who are involved in all of these events, where did you find them, and do they come from actual cooking backgrounds?
No, nobody. You know, Derek Yuen and Suman Baek, those are the two other kind of the core of it, I guess. And then we have this rotating cast of characters that, you know, people that are on the periphery of the food world. Most of them don't do food completely professionally. Some of them do. But it kind of rotates in and out, like, based on what the event is. We're kind of like this weird jazz band that's like, hey, you know, you want to jam my band tonight? Okay, cool. And then, you know, you're up there with the sax. So,
in 2011, you were involved in kind of one of the most punk rock food, I guess, pop-up situations that I've ever heard of. Right, correct. When you jumped on the L train,
that was fun.
Huge group of people created a 6-course tasting menu.
Yeah,
from 8th Avenue all the way to the end of the line. I would imagine
the end of the stop. Yeah, that was a lot of us. That was with Michael Serino at Razor Shiny Knife, and it was like 3 to 5 people with a new course every 3 stops that would come on.
How did that creation process happen?
A
How did
really
that go?
Big Excel spreadsheet. I swear to God. Look, we tackle really weird creative kind of challenges, and the way we always kind of do it is seemingly just one little step at a time, honestly. And we were just like, you know, we've gotten really good at kind of designing food for a situation or a challenge, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, think about the constraints you have when you're trying to do that on a train. Well, anything that's cooked a la minute is out. You know, you have to streamline your team. You have to make everything fit into 2 crates so 3 people can carry them. You know, you can't do a lot of stuff with, you know, trays and intricate plating. So, you kind of start at those constraints of what the situation you've created for yourself is, and then you kind of design a menu around there. So that's kind of how we tackled it.
And they were like creepers going on the train and on Sunday, I think it was a Sunday.
Oh, right? Yeah, we were, like, scoping out the train, just, like, riding it back and forth, like, 3 or 4 times with notebooks and sketching out, like, where the garbage cans are and where the exits are and where, of each station. Yeah, it was a little creepy. Yeah.
No, I can only imagine. So. I've like, tried to meet my girlfriend on the first car of the train. Yeah. Like, I've missed her. Like, it took an hour to meet her again. Like,
yeah, well, my favorite part, reading about the experience of that lunch, I guess.
It was lunch. It was 1 o'clock.
The people who ended up being a part of it who hadn't signed up for it, but you guys had some extra slots open, is that right?
And
you
just let 2 people? Because, when the ticket email went out, like, it was just, like, a nice, it was advertised as, like, a nice lunch, and, like, a lot of people, 2 people didn't really give credence to what that was. We didn't tell anybody what it was ahead of time, so.
They didn't know it was on the train,
we had 12
right?
seats. No, no one had any idea. We had 12 seats, and then only 10 showed up, so we had 2 empty seats on the train, and so we just got walk-ons,
And those people were from another country?
Yeah, it was like 2 Argentinian kids, and I think his girlfriend was like, no, let's not do this. And they kind of chatted about it for a second, then you just hear him go, why not we take a chance? Yeah. And then they just sat down. So.
I just can't imagine that experience of going to another country and walking into that and trying to kind of calibrate in my brain how unconventional it was for the city they were in and just trying to figure out, like, is this normal or is it because I'm foreign?
Definitely not normal. Yeah, no, so that
how lucky for them.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
I hope so.
I would love that to happen.
Well, and that too that didn't show up were like kicking themselves.
Oh, yeah.
That they missed this. But did you all ever think about doing that kind of just totally improvisational? Not on the food side, but on the like the guest side, like the writers just saying yes to it in the moment.
Did we ever think that
somebody to not would... just have like diners that you would schedule to be there, just people on the train and ask them to be
Yeah, it could have gone that way. I mean, I think that, you know, at the end of the day, I guess that wasn't like a key component of what we were thinking. We were so focused on just getting the food out and getting the whole logistics out and honestly just not getting arrested. I think we were like, you know, if we get 60% of the way through this and then the cops come, then we'd be fine. But we actually got 100% through it, so that was good.
It'd be nice if a cop came and then they became part of the experience.
Well, we were so nervous because like when we were like scoping out the subway, there was, you know, during that innocent little run back and forth, we saw like 4 different cops and like 5 different constructions come on the way out and on the way back. So we're like, oh my gosh, this is probably going to happen.
I thought it just happened to be the 5-day.
It was a 5-borough book tour, bike tour that day. So this was like where it gets a little like diehard, like, oh, the cops are at the parade. Let's rob the bank. You know, like all the cops were like at the 5-borough bike tour, making sure people didn't fall off bikes. And we got away with that.
So. You were free to eat.
Exactly. I mean, I would truly challenge a police officer to find a reason, like to find actually a law in their book of laws that says like no dinner party or lunch party.
I think it's literally, this is when they play that card, you know, the sticker you always see in the wall that no eating, but no one ever enforces that.
Right.
Like, I feel like there's a lot of rules like that are just there just in case someone's really being obnoxious about their eating. And I just imagine them just pointing at the
thing. No China knives on the train.
No China. Yeah, exactly. They're plastic, man. It's cool.
So. I want to hear about your latest, your highbrow, lowbrow that we touched upon. I really, really love the idea that it was conceived after soliciting people about what their last supper would be.
So the last meal thing is a thing we've been doing for 4 years now. And actually, like, it kind of just leads to like a bigger kind of purpose of what we do is we try to just use food as a medium to you know, show people a different side or show people an interesting point of view about, you know, themselves. And so we have this thing on our website on studiofeast.com where you fill it out to get on our list and you have to fill in what your last meal would be. So we've been collecting thousands of these responses over the last 4 or 5 years. And every year we take that year's responses and we just turn them into something that inspires a meal. So the first year we did it, it was the top 25 items. And I can tell you, I can guarantee you, cheese, chocolate, and chicken are like the Harvard, Yale, and Princeton of like the top 3 items. They just rotate every year. They're always in the top 3. So, you know, we did that the first year. And then every year we kind of find a new way to look at the data and then and do a different angle. So last year we did not the most popular. We did the B-sides. We did the most obscure, you know. Mm-hmm. So this year it was like this pattern kind of came up of like people always wanting really nice things with really not so nice things. Right? So we were like, let's do highbrow lowbrow. So, you know, like, I think the one that really tipped it off for me was champagne and a Chicago dog.
Yeah, I saw that as a girl from Chicago, like, the Chicago dog idea. I mean, it wasn't exactly that, but...
No, exactly.
Like, I love that it was on the menu, Chicago flavors.
Yeah.
Which could mean a lot of things.
Yeah, I know. A lot of things. But yeah, it was a glass of champagne, and it was a Chicago dog turned into a tartare. So instead of an all beef frankfurter, it was beef tartare, and then all of the accoutrements that go on a Chicago dog happen to just taste really awesome as a tartare as well too.
I bet.
So and then we had 6 or 7 courses like that. And
what was the one that went with? There was a Miller High Life.
Oh, that was a caviar and chicken.
See, there you go, Jesse. And a Miller High Life.
Somebody, I love some Miller
There's
High
no
Life.
Shame.
It was because it's the champagne of beers,
right?
And we all know caviar and champagne. Right.
And sweatpants.
And sweatpants. Champagne and fried chicken is actually one of the most classic highbrow, lowbrow pairings.
I think it tastes good. I mean, yeah. Let's, you know.
So champagne and beers, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm curious for both of you, Danielle and Mike, what your last meal would be. I'm sure you've given this some thought at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's my mom's shrimp fried rice and my dad's like soy sauce, like short ribs.
Oh, that's nice.
I have like a 5-course meal.
She does.
Mike, for our first Valentine's Day together, we're dating, everyone.
It's public.
It's radio official.
Mike made me my last meal, which is awesome. So I don't even know if I remember all of
it. And then I murdered her.
That's romantic, but that's also slightly like, okay, what does this mean?
What's next?
Yeah, where do you go from here?
So mine's in is a chopped Israeli salad with tahini, handmade French fries, stuffed artichoke from Carmine's, pepper sesame crusted seared tuna. And then a chocolate pecan pie yeah. with vanilla bean ice cream.
Now, did that just immediately just come out of your head? Or were you like, I'm going to spend this week thinking about all of my favorite things and how to put them all together?
No, I did an interview with Mike before we were dating, and I interviewed him about the last meal because they generally do these beautiful infographics that go along with the dinner. And so as part of the interview, I wrote what mine was, and I put a lot of thought into it. But my sister and I have this really fun game, which is like, if you could eat for an entire day and not get full or fat, what would your meals look like? And we can,
it's a good game.
We used to play it when we were in Florida and driving around with my grandmother. We were trying to keep ourselves busy, and we would have so much fun. So yeah, I'd give it and I was a little kid that had always thought of, like, planned out if I ever got on supermarket sweeps, like, yes. where I would go. So I kind of had it in my backpack, and I knew that these are the things that I would want. And,
yeah. Do you know what yours is, Jesse?
Yeah, it would be Dungeness crab legs and just, like, a bottle of, like, Muscadet or something just really fresh and clean. And
amen, sister.
That would be me.
That's a good one.
What about you?
I didn't dodge it. No, I've given it tons of thought. I think about it every day. well, I mean, definitely French fries, but like the thick skin on.
You're a thick cut person. Yeah.
I mean, not the wedge, but not the skinny like bullshit. Mm. You know, McDonald's.
F shoestrings.
86 shoestrings in 2014.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you. Steak fries?
Like, do you remember that? Do you know that place? I mean, I grew up in Ohio, but it was like it wasn't Steak and Shake, but it was like that, and they have the best fries. We've got Lei Chi Su doing some social media.
It's fine. It's paparazzi. It's
yes,
fine.
Paparazzi for Mike and Danielle. the kind with the skin on, and then you gotta have the malt vinegar, you guys. Yeah. Yes. You just do.
I'm from Maryland, so we have like boardwalk fries.
Yep. Yeah. You have to have vinegar and ketchup together. It's very important.
French fries?
No.
I mean, it's just your last meal. Like, who knows? You don't want to be that full.
Well, I also want to eat the goat cheese and potato pierogies from the Stanton Social with the truffle creme fraiche. Because there's got to be truffle going on in there. I mean, basically, like, give me something creamy, something potato-y, and something truffly, and I'm good to die.
It's the four food groups.
Thank you. Yeah.
Truffle is that condiment you can just add on anything. Yeah. Or at least people think so.
I would die happy if I died of truffle overdose.
Mike, what's next? What's your next endeavor?
What's next? We are actually, I started a innovation firm for food, and I used to do product development and innovation for Chobani, and I've left there, and now we're doing it for other food companies right now, and we're basically just rethinking fruit product design, both on the edible side and the packaging side. So that's kind of what's next right now, is just kind of busy kind of digging my heels into that and kind of getting going with that. It all kind of works, oddly, strangely enough, together with what we've been doing at Studio Feast, because as outlandish as the Studio Feast stuff is, it's always kind of just like taking challenges and solving them with food. So we're kind of splintering off and doing this properly as well, too, for clients. So more to come on that. But
well, we'll have to have you back to talk about that.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Absolutely. So the website is studiofeast.com.
Yep.
Check it out. We're going to take a break here. We're going to come back with another food innovator, Daniel Gould.
Yay.
You are listening to Setback by Sleepies on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
And we're back here on The Morning After in studio, Daniel Gould, founder and CEO of Food Tech Connect.
Food and Tech Connect.
They are a network for innovators transforming the business of food, which there's a lot in that.
Yes.
There's a lot in that. And Sari and I were kind of talking to each other. We're like, I can't wait to hear what this is about because, like I said, my brain is not scientific. So I guess to start, how do food and tech connect?
Well, technology is completely changing food. I mean, if you look at any industry, financial services, healthcare, education, they're all being disrupted by technology, and the same thing's happening in food. So everything from the way that farmers manage their farms to the way that they connect, distribute their products, the way they connect with consumers, to the way that retailers are selling their food online, to the way that consumers make decisions about what they're buying and how to make like healthier decisions. All of that is being driven by technology now. So I started thinking about this about 4 years ago when I was working for a company called Bright Farm Systems that designs rooftop greenhouses at the time. They just designed them. Now they build them, operate them. And it was through social media that I started thinking, wow, this is really powerful because here you have all these people that are using social media to connect and there's all this information that they're sharing. And part of the thing with food is that everything is so, you know, we talk about food being a system, but actually it's all siloed and people are all off in their own places doing different things. So it was like, wow, this is a really powerful way to start connecting people. So I started the website as a way to start writing about these ideas. And as I started writing about them, people started reaching out to me and saying, oh, this is what I'm working on. I didn't know anyone else was thinking about this. So I started interviewing them. And generally, I mean, a lot of these people were startups. And it was really early days. I mean, now if you read the New York Times and if you read The New Yorker, anywhere, everyone's writing about there's all these new food startups that are popping up. But at the time, there were like 50 organizations. Probably like half of those were startups and half of them were like World Aid organizations that were thinking about data and technologies that are related to food, and now there are over 2,000. So what we do is, and what we've been doing is, we're ostensibly a media company. So interviews, analysis, online editorial, we do events, and then I've done consulting. And now we're starting to expand in some other fun stuff.
So someone like Mike, who's starting up this new product, or even just Studio Feast, is he somebody who could reach out to you to kind of learn how to get his business up and running in the right way?
Yeah, well, so a lot of what we've done up until now is I'll do interviews with technology startups to understand what their business models are, you know, what makes them successful. Because it's really early days. It's kind of the Wild West right now. So it's kind of like cataloging and documenting this to help everyone else. So, you know, someone like Mike, maybe he would come to the website to understand what other people are doing in this space. Another thing that we do is we look at the larger trends. So, like, what are big companies doing as it comes to innovation? Because a lot of these big companies will become acquirers of the small companies, and that's really important when you're looking as a company if you want to get funding from investors or from venture capitalists. And, I mean, it depends on what kind of investors you're going to, but they want to know, will someone acquire you? And that the food landscape is changing very quickly, so that, like, what Mike's starting to do right now, I mean, 5 years ago, there was very little discussion about innovation in food, and now every large company is thinking about how do we become innovative, how do we accelerate our product development, where does technology fit in?
Why do you think that is? Why is it important for food to go into a different direction?
Well, because food it's really slow. Like, if you think about product development, it takes most companies about 3 years to develop a new product. So from conception to when it gets to the shelf, that's a really long time. Trends die in that time, right? Like, we don't know. And so that's really frustrating for companies. And the decision making, all the decisions that happen, they can't be lean and iterative. And what's happening is that people are getting more excited as startup culture starts to, you know, to infect everything. People are like, I want to do this faster. I want to spend less money. I want to fail faster. And so, and that's starting to happen in food because, yeah, because it's just so capital intensive, and because people are failing, because also consumer demand is really shifting. And you see that more people are interested in going to supper clubs. They want artisanal food products. They want, you know, things that are more custom and that fit their needs more.
I think people are just getting smarter.
Yeah.
People are getting smarter and they want better things. And, you know, the way that companies used to make products just doesn't really help meet that as best as possible. So I think people are looking for a different way.
Well, something that I've noticed about what you do, Danielle, that I think is really, it's really special is the way that you think so progressively, but you're able to apply technology and bring it back to roots, like the way that you think about agriculture. And I love what you've been doing with sustainable meat. I mean, especially someone like you actually doesn't eat meat, but you're such, you're an advocate for thinking about ways to produce meat that's more humane. And you've been, you held that huge event, Hack Meat. I'd love to hear about that, because those are ways in which, you know, in my mind, like, how to use technology to create more sustainable ways to think about meat. It's just, it really kind of blew my mind when I started to understand and learn what you were doing.
Oh, thank you. So one of the events that we do these events called hackathons. And what a hackathon is typically when a bunch of developers get together and they tackle a problem in a really short amount of time. So they develop a new feature for a product, or they develop a new product, or and it's becoming a really popular medium for developing things, rapidly prototyping things, and a lot of people are producing hackathons. We apply the hackathon model to food, and last year we hosted two events, one in New York and one in San Francisco, or one in Palo Alto, focused on how we could use technology to help scale the sustainable meat industry. And so what we did is we worked with stakeholders, in quotation marks, to define challenges, and then brought them together with developers, designers, and entrepreneurs to come up with prototypes for solutions over the course of one weekend. And so, like, an example challenge, like James Beard presented a challenge, which was, how can you get chefs and consumers to celebrate the unique flavors of grass-fed meat, right? Because, like, for wine, people celebrate the terroir and they accept that there's variability. But for meat, people want consistency. And so there were some really interesting apps that came out of that, where just around education for chefs, and yeah, kind of some advocacy campaign stuff. And then, you know, there were other ones. One of the cooler projects that came out, one of the winning projects, was from New York, was a Wi-Fi enabled scale to track cuts of meat. So for producers, for ranchers, and they have a really contentious relationship with processors. And so the idea was, how can we streamline data collection to improve communication across the supply chain? So that's it was a Wi-Fi enabled scale that came out of it, and they're still working on it. And yeah, and next year we're turning our attention. We're going to be hacking dining, or this year, actually.
It's 2014.
Yeah, it's 2014.
I love that. I mean, it's not just bigger, better, faster. It is, but yeah, it's also more humane, more sustainable, less waste, more efficient in that way. I mean, for me, sometimes technology and agriculture feels counterintuitive, but yeah. I love how you show that it doesn't have to be at all.
Well, a lot of food, I mean, food is kind of averse to technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially when you're talking about sustainable food, right? Because technology is this thing that sold everyone down the river. But there's also different kinds of technology, mm-hmm. you know, and I think something that I talk about, because in some ways, like, at my heart, I come from this advocacy perspective where I'm like, we need open data and we need to democratize technology for everyone. And all of a sudden, you know, information technology, this revolution where information is a new currency, you know, and it's going to be where you can drive efficiencies like in agriculture, for example, people use seeds for efficiency, but if you have better information and you can optimize your planting and your distribution, and then so that you don't need to grow more food, you know, we're growing enough food. It's more about, how do we get the food to the right people, those kind of things. And so, the events that we do are really about, in the past they were about catalyzing, entrepreneurship, and it was about getting people to build products that actually solve problems, because you have a lot of interest in this space, but people don't necessarily. Food is very tough, and it's very difficult for a technology person to understand the intricacies of the industry and get exposure to it. And so the idea was, how can we bring these people together to co-create solutions? Moving forward, we're going to be really focusing on just like open sourcing innovation and coming up with insights and coming up with prototypes that can then be open source and anyone can build on top of them. And so I'm excited to tackle the dining industry, or food service industry, which has lots of challenges and very little innovation.
So is that where you see a void right now? I mean, looking forward in terms of what you see needs to be built upon and what needs to be tackled going forward?
It's just what we, every year we pick a different focus, and this year we decided to pick food service. And so we're just getting started with all the planning right now, but hopefully we'll be tackling everything from school and hospital food to corporate food service to, you know, restaurants of all, quick service, casual, yeah, so I'm really excited. I mean, there are so many different challenges, and
that's big.
The margins are very small for restaurants. So there is very, you know, and things haven't changed that much. It's still kind of mom and pop.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be fun.
So the people who are who you are connecting, are they coming from all over the country? Are they coming from the coasts? Are they coming from other countries? Who is talking in your network?
We have a global, it's global, and it's pretty, it's really diverse. I mean, at any one of our events, we have people from, like I said, all over the world, but people from agriculture and people from the health world and people like designers and technologists. And yeah, so it's very diverse. And then also people from all levels of, you know, we have farmers coming together with like CEOs of major technology companies. And so that's very exciting. There's also just never been more interest in food, and it's something that people can really relate to.
Yeah. I really love that you guys are a couple. I met you. So warm and fuzzy. I met you both as individuals at Studio Feast, and I don't think I really even realized that you were a couple right away, but you both struck me as such innovators, and you know, you're really people that have like established networks, and you really kind of do things your own way, and you have your own visions, and I'm just kind of curious how you feed off each other, you know, in a relationship, or how you inspire each other, because what you do is very different. I mean, you're both mm-hmm. innovators, but you're focused on very different things. Where do you guys, where are you food and tech connect?
We have some pretty bitchin' pillow talk. involves sticky notes
we do have a lot of sticky notes.
We do. I mean, it, like, where do we kind of?
Well,
we're
to start,
talking
we're,
about
yeah, but all we're kinds we're of collaborating stuff. On yeah. Hack Dining.
Yeah.
Which so, I'm really excited about.
So part of the thing that, you know, I do with my agency is like really like human-centered design. So really just understanding like what the situation is on the ground and what people really truly think and feel and act before you start designing a solution. So like just because you can create a widget with technology doesn't mean you should. And that's kind of like taking a step back, and especially in the world of dining, where if you think about a kitchen, right, a professional kitchen, there's 1,000 different little kind of hacks that maybe are not the most efficient or the most like, you know, perfect, but that's just what people have created to like get through, you know, in a kitchen. And it's not like you can just storm in there and say, we now have this new technology that does this, without it, if doing that without any sensitivity to like what the situation really was, and to be in a kitchen, to be in a small kitchen and have those things, is really dangerous. So that's what we're trying to do, is to try to like get people to think about, okay, well, think about the problem you're looking at, to think about the arena, what are the players, what are the constituents, what are the problems, and what's it really like to be there, and then start thinking about solutions versus the other way around, which is like, oh, well, a new POS system, that's going to be great, you know, everyone's going to love it, what's not to love. So
yeah.
So that's kind of like where we're collaborating. I'm kind of fitting in as a puzzle piece to the larger event and helping the participants kind of think that way and go through that process, so that whatever comes out on the other end hopefully is stronger and more well thought out. Yeah. So yeah, that's one of the many ways, but we just, I don't know, we collaborate a lot. We're constantly bouncing questions on each other. We actually moved in together earlier this year, and we painted the walls on our first floor all with chalkboard, and we have an office that's completely painted in whiteboard. So it's usually always like let's go to the board, and we can like sketch something out, and so yeah, it's good.
It's like really cute and nerdy.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty nerdy, but it yeah. works for us, so.
Yeah. Well, Mike Lee and Daniel Gould, I'm a little hoarse.
I think I'm going to take over for you right now.
Please do.
I feel like you are.
It's been great having you guys on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for coming.
You guys are awesome.
Yay.
Here's to 2014.
To 2014.
All right.
Yeah, movers and shakers.
This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for tuning in. See you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.